Max encourages you to join them in supporting public broadcasting.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. I'm glad to have you with us. At the controls this morning, Jason Croft, and producing the show, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. Well, here on Focus 580, every month, and we've been doing this for a long, long time, we do a program on the subject of home maintenance. And when we did our last program, just a couple of weeks ago, we had a lot of questions, and there was a lot of conversation about compact fluorescent lights. People had questions about them and their energy impact and whether you could use a dimmer and all sorts of things. And this started me thinking that, well, perhaps it might be a good idea for us to here on Focus to do a program about lighting and talk specifically about lighting and energy, and also perhaps talk a little bit about how lighting affects the way your home feels. And we looked back in our files and we thought, well, you know, some years back, we talked with a guest who knew an awful lot about lighting, and she was very good. And I thought, let's have her back on the show again. And we called her and she said, well, sure, she would do that. And we're pleased to have her joining us this morning by telephone. Nancy Clanton is the founder and the president of Clanton and Associates. It's a lighting design firm that specializes in sustainable design. She has a Bachelor of Science degree in architectural engineering with a special emphasis on illumination from the University of Colorado at Boulder. She's also a registered professional engineer in the state of Colorado and speaks throughout the nation on topics relating to sustainable design and energy efficiency and light pollution. She's also worked as an instructor at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And we're pleased to have her with us once again. Questions are welcome. This is now the opportunity for you to ask questions that have anything to do with lights and lighting. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number, and that is 800-222-9455. So again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. And at any point here, you have questions, you give us a call. Well, Nancy, thanks very much for being with us once again.
Well, thank you, David.
I want to mention that when we talked to you first, it was a couple of years back, someone recommended you and said that you were Amory Lovin's favorite lighting expert. And we said, if it's she's good enough for Amory, she's good enough for Focus 580.
So. Well, it's interesting. I just got an email from Amory this morning when I got to the office, and it was looked like he sent it about 1 in the morning, which is about Amory's time. So I haven't heard from him for a couple months, so it's very apropos.
Okay. Well, I did, indeed, I started thinking about having you on the program again because, as I say, recently we did this program. We do this every month that deals with home maintenance kind of issues, and we got tons and tons of questions from people who were working with, bringing into their homes, maybe for the first time, they were experimenting with compact fluorescence. And I think that probably everybody knows that one of the virtues of this kind of light compared with the incandescence that we're all used to and have lived with all these years is that they use a lot less energy. So maybe that's something we could talk about for a moment, or I could ask you to talk about for a moment. In a house, what percentage is it possible to say, roughly speaking, what percentage of people's energy consumption goes into lighting?
Quite a bit goes into lighting, especially if you use the home during the day. We now know that about 20% of people are using their homes as home offices, which is something that didn't happen years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're a salesperson or you kind of live out of your car and around. So this is a huge issue now for the utility companies, switching the loads from the typical office back to the home. Hmm. And then, of course, people who stay at home have, you know, a lot of lighting energy. And that's especially true if you don't have good day lighting in your house, where people will turn on their lights. And at home, typically, like you were mentioning, fluorescent lighting has not really caught on here in the United States, where it has around the world, because energy costs are 4 or 5 times what we have here.
Hmm.
But it's now becoming kind of the new thing is to look at fluorescent lighting. You notice that many of the big box retailers, they will have good deals on compact fluorescent lights. And I think it's very important to let the homeowner know how and when to use a fluorescent light because, you know, we've heard some stories where people just are not that satisfied with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a range of questions here that I could ask, but I tell you what, I have a caller, and rather than make them wait, well, we'll see what's on their mind, and then I'm sure we can get back to some of these issues, particularly about the compact fluorescence, as you say, how and when to use it, what to think about when buying one, and so forth. But we'll go and we'll get this question here, and it's from someone who is in Champaign, and they're on our line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Yes, I have two questions very quickly. One is that I wonder if you could address the concern about the disposal of compact fluorescents and the billions of bulbs that over the next many years are going to be disposed in regard to the toxic chemicals that are what I've heard many, many myriad times worse than any disposal of an incandescent bulb. My second question, if you could address it, is in regard to the trend over the 100 years for lighting the streets and the studies that have and the consequential light pollution that restricts our ability to see the stars, and the studies that have referred to the street lighting is not necessarily reducing crime, and that maybe natural light is just as, or darkness is just as effective as street lighting for neighborhoods.
Wow, I could not have picked two better questions. You are very intelligent and well informed about the issues. Let's first start in the disposal issue. You're absolutely correct. Every compact fluorescent lamp, including all fluorescents, do have mercury in them. Now, the good news is that they're easy to recycle, but you have to recycle them. And it's going to be information and education to the public. You just don't throw these away into your trash can and into the landfill. There are recycling centers set up. I am not sure if Illinois has any. I'm not that informed. I do know Minnesota does and Florida because it's law that they have to recycle these lamps. Around the country, if you go to the lamp manufacturers, you can actually get containers that they will send you for your burnt-out light bulbs, and you can send them back. The major three lamp manufacturers, Philips, Osram Sylvania, and General Electric. Those are the three in the United States, and they all have recycling programs. But you're very astute to understand that these do need to be recycled. We are trying to encourage the big box retailers to have recycling on site. So when you go to buy a new light bulb or lamp, which is what technical folks call it, that you can bring in your burnt-out light bulb, they will take care of it, and then maybe even give you a discount on your next one, so encourages you to go to their store. There's a lot of talks going on. Everybody is aware of this problem. And, yeah, if your listeners could just understand, please don't throw them away and dispose of them properly at a recycling center. Your second issue on the light pollution and the street lighting, it is the most harmful light, and again, I'm going to focus in the residential areas, is to have light coming into your bedroom windows and into your homes. If you can fully shield the light, which is directing all the light downward, and the type of street light you have, if it has opaque sides and tops so that the light only comes out of the bottom, out of a flat lens, then you won't get this light trespass into your homes, and the light pollution, which is the light going directly up into the sky, is a lot less. Many communities are now redoing their street lighting to go with fully shielded lights. San Diego is completely redoing their street lighting. So is Anchorage, Alaska, of all places, recognizing that they may even look at a seasonal type of dimming system on their street lighting, because when snow is on the ground, you need a lot less light because of the high reflectance. Your comment about the crime and lighting, there have been, unfortunately, very few studies that show that lighting reduces crime or it does not reduce crime. And the one that the people promoting more lighting seems to quote is one in England where a really tough neighborhood got street lighting, and what happened is that the crime actually moved away to another adjacent neighborhood. So it wasn't that it got rid of it, but it moved away. We have done a lot of work with the Department of Defense looking at air bases and Army posts, and they are going more towards less light. That with their security and everything, they would much rather not give light to the person trying to commit the crime. And so they're definitely, the Department of Defense is going away from over-lighting or lighting everything to a lot less light. And I think neighborhoods could do that too.
Well, I hope that that gets at the comments of the caller. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Let me again introduce our guest, Nancy Clanton. She is the founder and president of Clanton and Associates. It is an award-winning firm that specializes in lighting design, and particularly is concerned about issues of sustainability. It was founded in 1981, and she was with us a couple of years back. We talked about these same issues, and we thought, well, it would be a good time once again to talk about lighting on this program, particularly, as I explained at the beginning, because recently when we did our monthly show on home maintenance, we had a lot of questions and comments, people wanting to talk about compact fluorescent lighting for the home. So 333-WILL, toll free 800-222-WILL. Those are the numbers. Just a real basic here. I asked, the first question was, well, how much of the home energy use goes into lighting? And you said, actually, it's quite significant and gets more significant as people spend more time at home. So early on, I think when people started talking about compact fluorescence, they said, well, they use less energy. So ultimately, at the end of the day, even though they're more expensive than incandescents, you will end up saving money because you'll be using less energy. Now, does that still continue to be true? I mean, if the only thing people were thinking about was, I would like my monthly power bill to be less if they replaced all of their incandescents with compact fluorescence, would they notice a drop in their power bill?
They definitely would. And again, the compact fluorescent is going to use about one-fifth the energy for the equal light output of an incandescent. But there are things, I mean, kind of a checklist to look at when mm-hmm. you are selecting your compact fluorescent. The first thing is that if you've got a standard incandescent and it screws into the socket, you also then need a compact fluorescent that does the same thing, and they're called screw-based compact fluorescents. Very few of those screw-based compact fluorescents, though, are dimmable.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have it on a standard dimmer in your house, these compact fluorescents will just go on and off. They will not dim along with it unless you buy a dimmable compact fluorescent. The three manufacturers I mentioned earlier, you know, Sylvania, Philips, and GE, do have dimmable compact fluorescents. They each have like one kind, and they're right around 14 or 15 watts. And they say dimmable very plainly on the package, so that's important if you have that. Or if you have a table lamp that where you can turn the switch and you get three different levels of light, you know, from low to medium to high
mm-hmm.
with your incandescent, you can also buy compact fluorescents that do this. And you will notice three wattages on them, you know, 9 watt, 13 watt, and maybe 18 watt. And those, again, will then function similar to your table lamp function. One thing that people have noticed with compact fluorescents, when they first turn them on, they turn on sometimes a little dim, but then within less than a minute, they come up to full brightness. We kind of call that the soft start, and it helps the compact fluorescent warm up inside the bulb, and it also lets the compact fluorescent last a lot longer, you know, versus coming on instantly a brute force.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something you have to get used to, and I think once people understand that this is normal, and like I said, in less than a minute, it's up at full brightness, that's not a problem. And then I would say probably the last thing to really watch out for is the color that the compact fluorescent puts out. Most screw-in compact fluorescents come in two different what we call color temperatures. One of them, which is a really warm color, will be very similar to your incandescent. And you may look at the technical description. It will either have 2700 Kelvin on it, and it could go as high as 3000 Kelvin, and that will be, again, the look I think most residential customers want. There are also bluer lights, really sharper, whiter lights, which some people like. I do not enjoy those particular lights.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just way too cool. And those will have like a 4,000 Kelvin or 5,000 Kelvin on them. And they're maybe called daylight lamps. You've got to realize that daylight lamps are very blue. And my recommendation would be is to go to the warmer color lamps, which is what you're used to. So those are some of the things when you go and look and to buy, you know, the compact fluorescent, to kind of look at those things, which would be whether it's dimmable, and if that's what you want, that it is a screw-in, if that's the application, and then again, the color temperature, to make sure that it is the appropriate color temperature for what you want.
And I think there you're putting on your finger on what, at least in the past, in my experience, has been, I think, for a lot of people, the problem. And that's the way the lights looked. And I think for people who had limited exposure to them, and if they were in institutional settings, for example, I think maybe some of my first exposure to these kinds of lamps was in motels. And the quality of the light was horrible.
Right.
It was very blue, very, very harsh. And you'd look at that kind of light and you'd say, well, I don't want to have light like that in my house. Well, you can have compact fluorescence and have the same color quality of light that you have now, but as you say, you've got to read the package and you got to pay attention to that one little speck on there.
Exactly. And I think ask, you know, the hardware store person of, you know, what is the best. And many times if the color temperature isn't real evident, mm-hmm. they may say like warm white or home interior light, where they'll give some indication whether it's a warmer color. But I would stay away from the ones that say, you know, daylight type of wording on it, because those would be very blue
mm-hmm.
type of lights.
One other real quick question, and then I have several callers I want to get to. I think that there is some, when maybe I'm thinking of this as something somebody said when we did this last show a couple of weeks ago, about the fact that if you have a light that rather than turning it on and having it stay on for a long period of time, it's the kind of light where you turn it on, you turn it off. You turn it on, you turn it off. It's on and off a lot. Maybe it's a room that you're not using that much, or you go in there for a couple of minutes and then you leave. That's not great for energy consumption, and it's also not great for bulb life. Is that correct?
The old-fashioned fluorescence, that was correct. But, again, with the compact fluorescence and new technology of fluorescence, if you're not in the room, turn the lights off.
Okay.
That's basically, they've improved the starters. They remember that soft start I told you about?
Mm-hmm.
And they come on a little softer. That has really improved it, too. No, I mean, my recommendation is that no one's in the room, turn the lights off and don't worry about the compact fluorescent. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about the quality of your compact fluorescent that you're buying. I mentioned those three U.S. manufacturers. I would really try and stick with those three manufacturers. There are some offshore brands that you may not be happy with the consistency and color and also the life of the color. So if you run across and it's a name you've never heard of and it's for a buck a bulb or something, I'd be a little leery of it. I mean, you're just not going to get the quality that you would have from the U.S. manufacturers.
Okay. Let's talk with some other folks here. And next we'll talk with someone in Champaign, and this is line two. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I was very surprised that there is mercury. Is that in the starters of these fluorescent bulbs? And so often manufacturers discover they can do without these dangerous chemicals. And so I wonder, you know, is mercury absolutely, and I have a second question too, is mercury absolutely essential to the manufacturing of these fluorescent bulbs?
Great question. And currently, yes, it is essential. But the manufacturers are looking at other elements that to get rid of the mercury, because in the sustainable green world of design, people are up in arms over mercury. There are, yes, the manufacturers are looking at mercury-free fluorescence. It's going to be years and years away before we actually will begin to see those on the market. There are types of lamps, though, that are coming out, like the LED lighting, which is mercury-free. And then one manufacturer is using carbon nanotube technology to improve the incandescent. And if they're successful, the incandescent light bulb is actually going to be the most energy-efficient light bulb out there. So we may see a full circle, but they're planning and about to introduce that new incandescent that will have 10 to 20 times the efficiency of the ones we're using now. They're looking at about 2015 for that to come out. So in combination right now, I would still encourage the compact fluorescent, because if you have coal-burning power plants, the mercury that's gone up into the air to produce enough energy for the incandescent is more than the mercury in the compact fluorescent. So it's kind of, do we want it in our air, or do we have it in a bulb that we can recycle and get the mercury out of it? So you're absolutely right. We're eventually going to a mercury-free world, but until we stop coal-burning power plants and a better technology for the compact fluorescent, we're stuck with it for a little bit.
Thank you. My second question is, what is LED lighting? And I have a personal interest in this because I find when I go to public libraries and public places that after a while, I get eye strain is not even enough to describe the irritation I get in, excuse me, my whole system by being totally surrounded by fluorescent lighting. And, you know, people say, oh, it's all in your head, you know, don't worry about it, and things of that sort. And I wonder, you know, are there people who find the fluorescence without a balance between fluorescent and incandescent to be a problem? And would LED lighting solve this particular susceptibility that I have to fluorescent lighting?
Okay, let me first talk about, I'm not going to answer your questions in order. First, I'm going to talk about your perception of fluorescent and then go to LED. What you're noticing in many of the libraries and public areas, it's not necessarily the fluorescent light bulb itself, it's how it's applied. Most people in public areas, they lay out kind of a grid of lights that are located in the ceiling, and it's a very standard grid. And the problem is it's the glare that you're getting from the light, and it could be an incandescent, it could be a fluorescent, it could be any type of light. When we learned to read, we were told that the light should come over our left shoulder. But if you go to these public areas, most of the lighting's in front of you or directly over you. And this is even true like at kitchen tables, you know, doing homework or taxes at the kitchen table. The light's in the wrong spot. It should be coming over your left shoulder or from the side to avoid the light bouncing off of whatever you're trying to read and into your eyes, or just looking up and having that direct glare. So I think a lot of your frustration in the library probably has to do with the application. If the library has indirect lighting, where they're lighting the ceiling and the walls and not straight down on your desk, it would be so much more comfortable. And then if they had little desk lamps or something that you could adjust to get rid of the glare, you'd find a whole different situation. So it's not necessarily the fluorescent itself, it's the application. The LED light is just in its infancy right now. And what LED stands for is light emitting diode. It's basically the same technology as a computer chip that we have in our computers that send energy, electrical energy, between two wafers of silicone. By just adjusting the chemicals or the additives in that silicone, light goes between the two wafers instead of energy. And the light currently is very monochromatic, which means you will send out a stream of blue light, a stream of red or amber or whatever the additives are. By mixing red, green, and blue light, you actually get white light. It's the opposite of color pigment, which you would mix and you get black. You mix light, just like in a rainbow, and you get white light. So what LED lighting is taking those little monochromatic type of light sources, those computer chips, and making white light. Now, the advantage of them is that they're very efficient in what they do. All of their light is emitted out, so we don't get any losses. And where we're using LEDs currently is to graze surfaces, like wall surfaces. They're excellent task lights, or under your kitchen counter lights, really good, because they're range from a third of a watt up to 3 watts, and 3 watts is very, very, very bright. So their applications, you've got to realize they're extremely bright light sources. So wherever you use them, in step lighting or in grazing a wall or in uplighting a ceiling or in under kitchen cabinets, that you don't want to see and look directly at these lights because they're so darn bright. So that's where we're getting. They're just kind of becoming more and more popular. We can dim them. We can adjust their color. They're really fun lights to work with, extremely energy efficient. And just as our portable computers are getting faster and faster because of the increase in efficiencies of these little chips, you're going to just see this lighting taking off into applications. There aren't that many residential fixtures or light fixtures that use them yet, but I think in the next couple of years you're going to see a lot more, like for track lighting and wall sconces, up lighting. You're going to see LEDs really abounding in use.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Let me just again introduce our guest, and we'll get some more callers here. We're talking with Nancy Clanton. She's the founder and the president of Clanton and Associates. It's a lighting design firm specializing in sustainable energy. It's based in Boulder, Colorado. She is particularly interested in the issue of lighting and does indeed speak throughout the nation on a number of topics related to sustainable design, energy efficiency, and light pollution. She's also worked as an instructor at the University of Colorado at Boulder, where she went to school. And we're certainly inviting your questions about lighting. The reason we're doing the show is that a couple of weeks ago when we did our regular monthly program on home maintenance, we had a whole bunch of questions about compact fluorescence. And we thought, well, we could probably spend an entire hour here talking about issues having to do with lighting in the home and comfort and aesthetics and energy efficiency, all of those put together. And she was good enough to say, yes, yeah, she would spend some of her time with us today, and we certainly appreciate it. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Let us continue, and next we'll talk with someone else in Champaign, and this would be line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
It's fascinating to listen. I don't think I ever knew there were so many issues related to light before. I'm hoping that maybe Ms. Clanton could address what test results have shown about young people, the health of youngsters subjected to various light sources. Many schools I know use fluorescent lighting, and I have to wonder how effectively that lights, and also the impact that it has on children. I'm sure there are thousands of things about it that I never even considered. So if she would talk a little bit about that, I would appreciate it. And I'll just hang up and listen. And thanks
okay.
so much.
Okay.
Sounds great. Oh, the school issue. Wow. We now realize that the best lighting for classrooms is daylight. Surprise, surprise. And we look at a lot of the schools. I know I went to a grade school that had huge windows and that the primary light source was daylight. Then in the 70s with the energy crunch, everyone started designing windowless classrooms, which is one of the worst things we can now do to our children. The best studies on this is with the Heshong Mahone Group, and you can go to their website. I think it's HMG Group or something, but just Google Heshong Mahone Group. And they have looked at schools with daylight and without daylight and have found between 20 and 26% increase in test scores with children who had daylight. And they looked at schools in California, Washington, Colorado, looked at over 4,000 students and all the test scores. Now, the California Energy Commission has put out recommendations for high-performance schools called CHIPS. And in there, it's a huge discussion on the importance that every single classroom needs daylight and quality daylight for children to be able to look outside. Not necessarily just at a parking lot, but at some greenery. It helps them create to daydream. This is a very important process in the learning experience. And again, I would highly recommend if you're interested in this. Now, going to the fluorescent lights, same discussion as I had with the library. In California schools, they are now insisting on putting in indirect lighting that can be dimmed in response to daylight. Also making sure that the teachers have light on their teaching wall, whether it's a whiteboard or chalkboard. And the light is designed so that it basically is like a task light, so the students sitting can easily see what the board looks like because there's specialized lighting on that. Any light between the teacher and the student could cause glare. So we're pushing the light to the sides of the classrooms and really reducing that direct glare back into students. So, daylight number one. And this also continues into our workspaces and into our offices, that we have to have windows to be able to look out. Use that as a primary light source. Going back to your homes, same sort of thing. Making sure that you've got good daylight. Good daylight does not mean direct sun coming in and causing glare. Because then you'll close your blinds, you'll do anything to get rid of that direct sun. It's taking that direct sun and redirecting it up to the ceiling and other places, or putting in a shade, you know, whether it's an awning or some kind of shading device to eliminate that. Now, going into light and young people in the homes in the evenings, we have used to be society, if you look at our ancestors, they worked outside during the day, and in the evening, they went to bed, basically when it got dark. It's only been in the last 100 years or so where we now wake up in the dark, turn on the lights, drive to work, we're in a, you know, a very steady lighting condition in our offices unless we have daylight. Then we drive home and we keep lights on all evening long. This can really disturb circadian cycles and our hormone balance. So in the evenings, it's very important to not be exposed to blue light so that you can start your melatonin production, which increases into the early morning hours. And very important to sleep in darkness, that you don't get up and turn on lights, or if you can't sleep, to get up and turn on a light to read. Very harmful, because you will continue producing melatonin even in the darkness, whether you're sleeping or not. There's, I'll give you some studies to look at that goes, again, more in depth into this. Dr. George Brainerd, Thomas Jefferson University, and also Dr. Joan Roberts at Fordham University have done the most work on this whole exposure of light on teenagers and on and the elderly. That's kind of the crux of it. And then, of course, all of us in between, we are affected by it. So it's very important to not keep computers on or televisions on in your bedroom while you sleep, because that blue light is the most harmful spectrum to not to suppress our melatonin. And so there's, yes, it's very important. If you do need a light on, make sure that it's a red light, like a little red light in your bathroom, just kind of a night light. And you can do that almost like a Christmas tree bulb, you know, that is red, and have that in your bathroom instead of turning on the lights. But again, I really encourage you to go to the studies to look at the impact of lighting that we have now on our homes and in our neighborhoods. You know, lights coming in from the streets can be disturbing. We should not have any more light than over full moonlight, you know, while we sleep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, again, that's good information. Let's go on and talk next with someone in Urbana. It's line 3. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. First, I think there's a correction in order. You may have overlooked it. The lady said that the mercury was in the ballast, and I think that's incorrect. I think it's in the tube itself.
Yeah, you're right. I thought she said in the starter.
I think she did.
Yeah,
yes.
which technically, you know, your cathodes are in the tube.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It is in the bulb itself. It's to excite the phosphor. You are correct.
And this isn't simply compact fluorescence. It's any fluorescent. The long tubes as well have at least some mercury in them.
You're absolutely right.
And I think, the as you pointed out, the analysis has been for a long time that the mercury danger, the amount of mercury in the tubes, if they're not properly disposed of, is still less than the amount of mercury released by the increased amount of coal burnt at the power plant if you're using incandescent lamps.
Correct.
My question is, how much improvement is being made with the LEDs? I think I checked a plant supply source, and for their grow lights, or whatever you wish to call them, approximately the equivalent of, I think it was a shop light, it was still very close to $1,000 per unit.
Mm, wow.
Maybe that's an inflated price.
Definitely.
Compared to what it should be.
Oh, yes, definitely. The improvements in LEDs, let's go back a little bit on how they're manufactured. And this is kind of true with computer chips, too. It's not a refined process, as we know, in making these chips. And there's maybe only 5 or 10% of them made that are quality LEDs, which means they hold their consistency with color. And we call it kind of a binning process, where they make all the chips and they put them in different bins depending on the quality of the light that they produce. Most of the chips are very poor quality. Those are the lights that you're going to see in your Christmas tree lights or in kind of decoration lights. You know, they're still being used, or in the little giveaway flashlights that people can get, or keychains. But the quality LED lights, because there aren't that many of them, you know, 5, 10% in the process, are still very expensive. I do see the price coming down. And I think just like when we first bought our computers back in the early 70s, they were outrageously expensive. We're going to see the same technology with LEDs. Very expensive now, and then the price will drop dramatically. It's important to go to the quality manufacturers when you're buying your LEDs and getting test samples of them to make sure that it is what you want. And, you know, they, like I said, for residential lighting, there's just so little out there. We're using a lot commercially, but there's still expensive lights for the residents. So, but within a year or so, I think the price is going to drop.
I noticed that they seem to have completely converted our local street traffic lights signals to LEDs.
Yes, which is a fabulous application. And that's great. Now what they have to do is dim them a little bit at night,
mm-hmm.
especially the green, because we're used to that incandescent light that was filtered. And the incandescent puts out mostly red light, and it was filtered to green, and it doesn't produce that much green light. Now we're putting in monochromatic green LEDs, which are so bright green. And some communities now are looking at dimming those at night because they actually can be too bright.
Incidentally, the local city hall does not recycle compact fluorescents, but I believe they have a list of firms that will accept them.
Oh, that's great.
And I think anyone in Urbana or Champaign could go over to the Urbana City Hall and get that list. They had it at least last summer. And there are three or four firms that are recycling.
That's awesome. Well, you're way ahead of Boulder and a lot of other communities. They're still struggling on what to do with them.
All right. Again, well, thanks for the call. We're getting short on time here, about 5-6 minutes. I want to try to see if we can get some other callers in. We'll go next to someone in Urbana. No, pardon me. We'll go to Belgium over by Danville, line 4. Hello.
Hello. In your conversation, you've left out a group of lighting that I use in my business, and many people who are in my business do use it. It's called the low-voltage halogen light, and they're very small spotlights that can be directed to very specific spots, and they work on a low voltage. They also have a transformer. I think the halogens do have mercury in them also, but they're very small bulbs. They're not very large bulbs. And they're fairly efficient, and they light just what you want. They also come with a very white light if you want a white light.
You know, you bring up a really good point. And what actually, the halogen are incandescents.
Huh.
And no, they do not have mercury in them.
Oh, I thought
there's,
they did.
No. There's no mercury in them. But the great thing about the halogen, and you are correct, is that they're a very focused light, where the compact fluorescent is not. The compact fluorescent's a blob, and the tungsten halogen is a focused light. What's going to be the new replacement for those will be LEDs.
Yes.
So the LEDs, which are also a focused light, will be fabulous replacement for the tungsten. And the LEDs will way surpass the tungsten efficiency. The tungsten right now, I'm going to say, can be almost double the efficiency of the incandescent, where the compact fluorescent is 5 times the efficiency. The LED is just about the same efficiency as the tungsten currently, but it's going to improve dramatically. So that's what I would look for. Right now, there, I would not replace your tungsten if it's an accent light and a focus light until you can see a really good LED replacement. And they are coming out. We're seeing increased efficiencies in them. They're brighter. And within a year or so, I think there'll be a real viable replacement for the tungsten.
If I might point out another item the previous caller pointed out with the streetlights,
Yes.
One of the problems I've noticed with streetlights and LEDs are the old streetlights would get warm enough to melt the snow off in front of them. Now the LEDs, when the snow blows up into them and snows, you can't see the light. So they're trying to work out that problem. That is definitely a problem.
Unfortunately, you're right. The old streetlights are so inefficient, they put out so much heat. That, and again, going with more and more efficient type of light sources, they're going to put out less heat. But the LEDs, the one thing that will destroy them is heat, just like our computers will be destroyed with overheating. So that's the one thing that you have to have a luminaire or a lighting fixture really well designed for the LED to have heat sinks in them so that you don't burn out the electrical components of it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. And just real quick, just to make sure, because we've talked about complex fluorescence and LEDs, is it the case that though the LED is going to continue mostly to be something that you're going to, in terms of applications, it will be task lighting and it won't be general lighting?
Well, it could be general lighting. It's harder to be general lighting because it's such a focused light source.
Uh-huh.
What manufacturers are doing great lens designs to spread out the focus of the light source. Again, it's harder to work with. That's why the compact fluorescent as a general light or a blob of a light is going to be fabulous. And the LED is going to fill in the gap, just like the last caller was talking about, the focus light, where you just want light to go to a specific surface or location. That's where the LED is going to shine.
Okay, let's talk with someone in Urbana. And, we'll go to Muhammad, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a quick question. Many of the compact fluorescent bulbs that I see in the stores locally say not to be used in totally recessed lighting. Now, we have an awful lot of recessed lighting in our ceilings and various other places. Why can't you use those? And if you can't, where can some be located that can be used in recessed fixtures?
I'm not aware of that warning, which is really interesting. And I've got a couple reasons of why it may be. It could be that your recessed lighting may not be we call IC rated, which is insulation contact. But that's usually more of a problem with a higher wattage incandescent bulb. Another thing is, remember, these lights are blobs. If you put them in a recessed luminaire, it could overheat some of the electronics up in the ceiling because if they have electronic ballast, electronics do not like heat. And so just they may burn out more. So that could be another problem. And again, it's a blob of a light. It's hard to get out of the recessed can. It'd be better to go with a product that was more focused. So there are compact fluorescent retrofits that are screw-based that have a reflectorized lamp over them. Or, you know, just kind of like a floodlight. And that is probably a better application for the recessed application.
Well, there are some that are available. There's one called Greenlight, one company called Greenlight,
right,
that makes them. And it says they are available for recessed lighting, totally recessed lighting. But they're not very readily available. You have to find them on the web in order.
Yeah. Well, I think the great thing that we're learning here, you need to read the package. You know, I'm impressed that you are reading the package and trying to see what the applications are, because the compact fluorescent, again, isn't, you know, great for all applications. It's a fabulous light, and yet you really have to figure out what you're using it for.
Well, the wattage is the equivalent of the 75-watt. I did order some of those from Greenlight. And they work very nicely in those recessed, and they are usable for recessed lighting.
Great,
but they're not quite 75 watts. They don't seem to be put on as much light. They're not really a 75 watt incandescent equivalent, is what I'm saying.
Right. And again, it may be just because the light is having a harder time getting out of the recessed can.
Well, if I can find 100 watt. that they would work in my fixtures. I mean,
yeah,
the fixtures are suitable for 100 watt fluorescence, or I mean incandescence.
Right, right.
I'm having a little trouble finding them. And
yeah,
it's normal, the GE and the common ones say do not use in totally recessed lighting. They're on the bulb. So I'm going to have to hunt for them, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I think it's a heat issue with the electronics in the ballast.
I'm going to try and get one more caller in here, and that would be someone in Lafayette, Indiana, line two. Hello.
Yeah, I just had a few comments. First of all, it used to be that the light bulbs that were marked as daylight had a color temperature of 7,000 degrees, but after they introduced the rare earth phosphors, daylight came to be more commonly as 5,000 to 5,500 degrees, which is fairly close to that natural noonday sun of 4,800 to 5,000 degrees. So the modern ones do mix, I think, quite well with daylight. And usually you can get a color rendering index up to around 82, although 96 is possible. 82 is more available. So that's what I would think of as being a modern-day daylight fluorescent light.
You are correct in all of that. The problem is with the color rendering index, to compare color rendering index between different Kelvin temperatures does not work because it still is producing very little red light in those higher Kelvin temperatures. The color rendering index only works when you've got comparable Kelvin temperatures and then you look at it because the CRI, which is color rendering index, is not the most ideal measure. You would think, oh, all colors look good. No, it's compared to what the standard is. And the standard doesn't produce really good red light. And the daylight in those Kelvin temperatures you're talking about is not just the direct sun, because the direct sun, as you know, is very low color temperature, but it's the blue sky that is a very high color temperature, and in combination, it's an excellent, you know, type of light. But what we've noticed, you need to be under really high lighting levels in order to render all the colors. When we take that same Kelvin temperature and put it at a lower light level, the red just drops out. And that's what gives that crisp blue light that a lot of people just don't like in the evenings. You know, they want kind of a warmer color temperature in the evenings, similar to what their incandescents put out.
We're going to have to stop right there, because we're just here at the end of the time. Nancy, I want to say thanks to you very much for giving us some of your time. Obviously, people have a lot of questions, and you know, perhaps that means that sometime down the road, not too far in the future, we should do this again.
Sounds great.
Well, I appreciate you giving us your time very, very much.
You're welcome.
Nancy Clanton, she is the founder and president of Clanton & Associates in Boulder, Colorado. It's a lighting design firm specializing in sustainable design. They do have a website. If you'd like to find out about them, it's clantonassociates.com. Focus 580, made possible by a grant from Bodywork Associates, this year celebrating their 25th anniversary of offering licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana. Bodywork now is an office inside the Oasis Center in the Illini Union. Support also comes from the Infant Parent Institute, celebrating its 20th anniversary in Champaign. The Institute now has established the Center for Men and Masculinity, aimed at research, clinical services, and education about boys and men. Information at menandmasculinity.com. That's it for us. Up next, the Afternoon Magazine with Celeste Quinn.
And coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we're going to get cooking. Our guest will be food writer Andrew Schloss. He is the co-author, most